Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Erin Taylor, and I represent Mr. Christopher Bleedy, the appellant in this case. Before this Court today are two issues. First, did the District Court abuse its discretion in revoking Mr. Bleedy's supervised release? And second, was Mr. Bleedy's sentence reasonable? Your Honors, my argument will focus on the first issue. This is an unusual supervised release case. It raises issues regarding due process and the role of the probation office and district court in revoking a person's supervised release. In looking at the issue of due process, the Supreme Court in Morrissey v. Brewer and Gagnon v. Scarpelli in the 1970s held that an essential component of due process is that individuals be given fair warning of those acts that may lead to a loss of liberty. And we ask this Court to find today that the district court in this case abused its discretion in revoking Mr. Bleedy's supervised release because revoking his supervised release was in violation of his due process rights.
Mr. Bleedy still in jail?
No, Your Honors. Actually, Mr. Bleedy is back on supervised release. He was released from BOP.
So is this case moot?
No, Your Honor. It's not moot for a number of reasons. This because he's still under the criminal justice sentence of his revocation sentence. He's currently on 29 months of supervised release. So he's still exposed to going back to prison for revoke for violating any conditions of the supervised
release. Still in the country?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is he still in the United States of America?
Yes, Your Honor. He's currently under supervision by Christopher Barber in the Western District of North Carolina. He was released from BOP custody in November.
Made any steps to leave the country?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Has he made any steps to leave the country?
Your Honor, what he has currently done since his current term of supervised release is not in the record, but based on...
Well, you've been able to tell me everything else about it.
Yes, Your Honor. From my understanding, from his probation officer, Christopher Barber, he has attempted to gain visas to several countries, but was rejected because of his status as a convicted felon. I think that is a major hurdle he's facing, in addition to Liberia.
Prior to this time, remember, he got the airplane ticket to go and didn't go. Presumably, he could have gone to that country if he tried to get that airline ticket again.
Your Honor, if I can answer that question twofold. First, no, he could not have presumably have gone to Ghana. I think it's clear in the record that the deportation officer knew he could not get a visa to go to Ghana. And without a visa, he would not have been able to gain entry.
Airline ticket to Ghana?
Excuse me, Your Honor? Yes, Your Honor. The airline
ticket. You're having real trouble with hearing.
I'm having trouble hearing, Your
Honor.
Very
loud.
And I apologize.
I've never had anyone before say my voice wasn't loud enough.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It's just me. And I apologize for being a little nervous.
Was the airline ticket that he'd earlier received to Ghana?
Yes, Your Honor, was to Ghana.
And I thought his testimony was that once he got the airline ticket, he had the airline ticket in hand, and that it would be no problem to get from there to his home country. Is that not his testimony?
No, Your Honor. I believe the testimony from the deportation officer, according to
No, I'm talking about his testimony.
Mr. Bleedy didn't testify at the hearing low, but I think the testimony indicated that he was hopeful that he could get to Ghana and stay in Ghana. I don't think there was any testimony indicating that he would be able to get to Liberia at any point.
Okay.
And that was my understanding of the record. I believe he was hopeful to get to Ghana because he speaks the language there. And there are people from Liberia who are present in Ghana. But there is no evidence in the record that he could have entered Ghana without a visa. And there is no evidence that he could have gone to Liberia from Ghana as well. You know, I think it's worth noting that the government recognized that there was a problem with this case at the very beginning of the hearing. The government conceded during the revocation hearing that the judgment did not include a provision directing Mr. Bleedy to deport or self-deport.
But it did include a provision requiring him to follow the directives of the probation officer.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think this is where the due process issue is raised, because although the judgment does indicate that he was directed to follow the directives of the probation officer, I think in its application it raises due process issues, because in this case, the probation officer was directing Mr. Bleedy to do something that was not ordered by the district court.
And well, not directly, but certainly a directive that he do whatever the probation officer tells him to do seems pretty simple and direct. I mean, What's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, what's wrong with that is that it is, in its application, especially in this case, it's not very simple, it's not very direct, because imagine coming to a probation office and the probation officer says, hey, you have to do any and everything I instruct you to do.
But that's not what he said. That's not what he said.
He said to abide by the directives of the probation officer.
Right.
But there is no guidance as to what those directives could be, and the probation officer is left with a great deal of discretion in determining what to instruct a probationee or someone under supervision to do. There's no guidance there. The holding of the district court and under the theory of the government's theory, a probation officer will be allowed to instruct someone under supervision to do anything, regardless of what's stated in the judgment, and expose that person to revocation. And I think that's the danger that we have here if we affirm the district court's holding and affirm and go along with the government's theory in this case. They're essentially saying, hey, the probation officer told you to do X, you did not do X, therefore you're subject to revocation. And there's no guidance, there's no way for someone on probation to predict what sort of conduct would be prohibited with such a general and broad application of that condition of supervised release. And I think that's where we come. I think that's where the conflict is. Not the actual language itself, but in its application, I believe there's a problem.
I ask something. Has there been a final order of removal issued against the client?
There is.
There has been.
He has been deemed deportable. That's correct, Your Honor.
And a final order of removal. So even if we didn't rely on paragraph 9 of the conditions of supervised release, we have paragraph 1. The defendant shall not commit another federal, state, or local crime. And then we have 8 U.S.C. section 1253. Any alien against whom a final order of removal is outstanding and who willfully fails or refuses to depart from the United States within a period of 90 days from the date of the final order of removal shall be fined under Title 18 or imprisoned not more than 4 years. He violated that, right?
No, Your Honor.
No.
There were no allegations that he violated the law, especially in the...
What do you mean there are no... That gives the district court the basis for what it did. That's the allegation here is that he shall not commit another federal or state crime. You've already told me that he has committed it.
No, Your Honor. Mr. Bleedy did not commit any crimes in this case. And first, looking at the petition...
Well, how is what he did not a violation of 8 U.S.C. Section 1253?
Well, there are a number of issues with regard to that statute, Your Honor. First, the willfulness. And
uh-huh.
Second...
Okay.
Talk
about that.
Yes, Your Honor. There was no evidence... Well, first, this court has stated in United States versus Taylor that revocation of supervised release is an abuse of discretion if the person under supervision is unable to comply. In this case, there was a lot of evidence regarding the difficulties the government had in removing Mr. Bleedy. And most
That's not a requirement for his self-departure.
Your Honor,
he doesn't have to have the approval of the Liberian embassy for that.
Your Honor, according to the testimony of the deportation officer, the Liberian embassy was still preventing his removal even after he was released from ICE custody because they were still asking for an interview, and that's indicated on page 72 of the joint appendix.
The deportation would be by the United States government, but if he left on his own, which he's supposed to do, there wouldn't have been a problem.
Well, Your Honor, it's not clear what the actual self-deportation orders were.
He had a valid Liberian passport, right?
That was also an issue raised at the district court level, that Mr. Bleedy was informed that his Liberian passport was invalidated because ICE or some official had written inside his passport.
It was on his lawyer's desk.
Your Honor,
the actual, not the Xerox copy, the actual passport. So we know from this record he has an actual passport, right?
That the passport exists, but that he had the passport, there's no evidence in the record that indicates he had his passport. Your Honor, at the time of the revocation hearing, he was in custody. He did not have possession of his passport. He indicated that he gave his passport to his mother. His mother was present in the courtroom, was never called to testify. And his wife was present.
On his lawyer's on the table. That's, I'm making that up. That doesn't.
No, you are. You're not making that up. But how it got there is not in the record. So there's no evidence as to how that
his
passport
lawyer,
got there.
His lawyer, his passport. That's in the record.
Yes, Your Honor, that's in the record. But there's still no way to determine how the passport was there. And also, Mr. Bleedy did tell the probation officer he had given his passport to his mother, and that's not disputed. But whether or not he actually had a valid Liberian passport was still kind of up in the air and was never really addressed, because there was handwriting in the passport, which according to the...
It's appropriate that your client can just continue on this way and have the Liberian embassy refuse to have an interview, and that he will never have to leave on his own book, even though he has been ordered to do so by the United States government.
Your Honor, the fact that he's still here, I think, indicates the difficulty in his own self-deportation, including his indigency and his ability
to... He was able to buy the airline ticket. So, indigent or not, he did have, the record shows us, a valid airline ticket.
However,
he had the funds to do that once, right?
Once, but at that time he was working. His work permit has since been revoked, and he's no longer.
He can impoverish himself?
No, Your Honor, the immigration officials revoked his work permit. It will be illegal for him to work. In addition to that, it wasn't clear that he could even use the Ghanaian tickets to get to Ghana because he did not have a visa. The immigration officer indicated number of times that she knew he could not get a visa because at the time he had purchased the ticket, she had his passport. And given his status, he would not have been able to get a visa to Ghana, especially without having his passport being reviewed by any additional officials. So that is indicated in the record. Even though he had tickets, there's no evidence that indicates he could have actually entered Ghana because he did not have a visa to enter Ghana. And this case is difficult for a variety of reasons, one being, I think for this district, it was a case of first impression having to deal with someone who's subject to deportation but can't leave. And the Supreme Court has recognized that there are people in Mr. Bleedy's situation, that immigration officials have tried to deport several people. They are still unable to find a home for them, and they're under ICE supervision indefinitely. And this is likely going to be Mr. Bleedy's situation. I think the fact that he was returned to ICE custody, was unable to be deported a second time, and is currently back on supervised release indicates that there is a lack of willfulness and maybe a lack of – he just may not be unable to leave on his own accord. And I think in the broader scheme, I think allowing a probation officer to essentially create conditions of supervised release by instructing a defendant to do – anything that probation officer feels is appropriate or inappropriate would open the door to allow probation officers to subject people to revocation and jail time on a whim, without notice, without due process. And I think that, in the grand scheme of things, I think this case addresses that issue as well.
But what's the nature of your due process argument? Is it confined to procedural due process and lack of notice? Or are you making a substantive due process argument?
Your Honor, in this case, I'm limiting it to notice, Your Honor, in this case. And in addition to that, there's also an Article 3 problem, and there are a number of issues that this case raises, a delegation problem to the probation office. The probation officer's duty is limited to the orders of the district court, and the probation officer cannot on his own add to those conditions without getting permission from the district court. And that's why there are procedures in place allowing a probation officer to file for modifications and to request additional conditions of supervised release from the district court. And that did not happen in this case. And I think looking at what the government did at the beginning of the hearing, the government recognized that there was a problem because they had to strike half the language in the petition. And as a result, they were left with this very broad standard condition of supervised release, and they were using it as a sort of catch-all provision. And I think that creates a problem as well, because if we didn't have these specific facts, a whole affirmative district court decision would also allow probation officer to have somebody come in the office and say, hey, get me a cup of coffee. And that is technically an instruction. Should something as simple or as ridiculous as that expose a person to revocation? It shouldn't, but I think a broad reading of this standard condition will allow for that sort of behavior, and I think this court should keep that in mind in fashioning its decision in this case, and also keep that in mind when in looking at the broader application of this case. And, Your Honor, I'm just about out of time. If there are no further questions, I would like to take this time to conclude. Thank you.
Right.
May it please the court. I guess I'd like to begin by noting that on page 20 of the joint appendix, the final condition of supervised release provides that the defendant shall follow all orders, instructions, and directives of the immigration officials. That is part of the conditions of supervised release that the district court required in this case when imposing the original judgment. In addition, we have the district court requiring that the defendant abide by all instructions of the probation officer, and the government is not suggesting in this case that a probation officer could instruct the defendant to do something entirely divorced from a reasonable relationship to the conditions themselves. In other words, there would have to be there is a limiting principle, which is the probation officer can't instruct a defendant to abide by something that's not reasonably related to the conditions that were imposed. And in this case, the district court not only imposed the condition that if deported, the defendant shall remain outside United States, but also specifically imposed a condition requiring that the defendant abide by directives of immigration officials. So here, there's not a notice problem. I noted in our brief that to the extent the defendant is now invoking some sort of constitutional due process argument, that was not made in the district court, so this court's review would be for plain error. If the defendant is arguing that, well, we didn't have notice because we didn't understand that by failing to abide by ICE's directives, I was actually a little bit confused whether it was an authority issue, which is really what they argued in the district court, that the probation officer didn't have the authority, or if it's a notice issue that the defendant couldn't reasonably understand that his conduct would be in violation of the conditions imposed, but those conditions plainly directed him to abide by the probation officer's directives.
Why isn't the government relying on one, the defendant shall not commit another federal state or local
I think we could have, Judge Motz. I asked in this case, I think there was some concern about the specific statute invoked, and they just decided not to. I mean, the government decided that it was an easier case to prove, I think, if it was just the instructions from the probation officer failing to follow the directives.
Is there any plan for this gentleman to leave the country?
Judge Motz, we would like him to leave the country. I am not aware that we have – I don't know, honestly, what ICE's plans are at this point. What I can tell Your Honor is I think a fair reading of this record establishes that this defendant is not going to leave until the United States requires that he leave. And we were having difficulty, as established by the record, in obtaining the visa that we needed to be able – it was the escort official that we weren't able to get on the plane, and we escort all aggravated felons. He told probation officer Goodman, I'm not going to leave my family. I'm not leaving my children.
So there's going to be another case that you're going to bring. Like,
yeah.
This one.
I don't see any end to this issue. If he doesn't continue, I don't know, honestly, I didn't ask before coming up here exactly what the status is of this gentleman. I didn't realize he had been released. Perhaps I should have known that, but I did not.
Only, what, 7 months.
Right. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I should have realized that. It did just, you know, I tend to sort of focus on where we are and in the record, and I should have probably asked that question, but I didn't. So I don't know, except that I do feel like the record establishes clearly that this is not a defendant who was trying to leave the country. And nor does it support the defendant's argument that the district court abused its discretion in finding that his decision not to leave was not because he would be unable to, that it was willful because he says I'm not going to leave. I'm not leaving my wife and kids. And I would also note that he was, Your Honor, Judge Motz, I think you asked a question about whether he had been ordered deported. Page 52 of the joint appendix says that he was ordered deported. And then also the ICE officer North testified that he had said on page 61 of the joint appendix that he explained that he thought he could enter. And she testified that there are countries that you can enter without a visa. So the only evidence before the district court was that it, you know, who knows, maybe Ghana would have let him in. It was possible, and it was definitely true based on the district court's findings that the defendant chose not to leave, not that he was unable to leave.
I thought there was testimony that the Ghana plan was his plan.
It was his plan. I mean, it was his idea. He bought the ticket to Ghana, and ICE Officer North testified that she asked him, well, you know, do you think you can get in there? You don't have a visa. And he said, oh, yeah, he assured her that he could enter Ghana. So there wasn't any evidence to support the contrary theory that he was unable to. The only evidence in the record supports the district court's conclusion that he chose not to leave. So as to the notice issue, I would suggest if it's a constitutional issue, that's not been, if it's a narrow review, the notice is clear because have him not only instructed to follow the probation officer's instructions, but also a more specific directive, follow the ICE directive or the directives of immigration authorities. And then in terms of the abuse of discretion on the substantive finding that he violated, I think I've recited the evidence that is in support of the district court's finding on that point. The defendant has not argued the issue of the sentencing issue and the plainly unreasonable sentence. The argument that the sentence was plainly unreasonable, out suggesting that the defendant has waived that by not presenting argument. But if your honors don't have any questions about that issue, the government is content to rely on its brief. There are no further questions. Thank you.
Taylor, do you have any rebuttal?
Your Honor, I'd just like to reiterate to the court that I think a fair reading of the special condition should be a narrow reading of that condition, allowing a probation officer to instruct a probationee simply on what's ordered by the district court and not go beyond that. And I think that will prevent any issues regarding notice or any sort of due process violation. And I think that will appropriately address that issue. And just to note for the court, at the district court level, it was consistently argued that Mr. Vleedy was not put on notice. While it may not have been artfully argued, I think the district court was on notice that Mr. Vleedy did not have any idea that violation of any sort of ICE conditions would also amount to a violation of his supervised release. I think the district court and this court was sufficiently on notice that that was an argument.
You're relying on what, the Joint Appendix 81 for that?
I believe so.
Okay, and 83. Are there any other places in the record that you're aware of?
Your Honor, in all honesty, Your Honor, and I'm going to be candid with the court, the record below is a bit of a mess. And I think in addition to the authority arguments that were made, and through the questioning of the probation officer and through the questioning of the deportation officer, I think those issues were raised about whether or not self-deportation was in fact an actual condition of supervised release. And I think that was raised through the cross-examination of the witnesses and on pages 81 and 80 through 83 of the attorney's argument to the court. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I'd like to ask this court to conclude and remand this case and reinstate Mr. Vleedy's original term of supervised release, which was due to expire on October 2012. He is now due to expire at the end of 2013. Thank you.
We will ask the clerk to